So we need to talk about your move to New York.
Yeah.
What year was that?
I couldn't tell you.
2003.
Okay. Three.
Right.
Three.
And why?
Why? There are personal reasons. There was my dream as a five-year-old was to live in the West Village, to where, do you remember Maynard G. Krebs?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On Dobie Gillis?
Yes.
I wanted to be Maynard G. Krebs. I wanted to live in the village. I wanted to wear boat neck shirts made out of terry cloth, just like Maynard G. Krebs. That was my dream, to be in New York. Since then, I had severed my relationship with Fishback, which was later, we remarried later. Emily was in college, medical school. I always wanted to live in New York, and I loved every minute I was there, except for those days I was trying to get a 5x7 foot canvas down the street. Those days I hated. It was a hard place to live if you didn't have a lot of money. And at that time, I did. I don't now, but I did then.
Where did you live?
I lived in the most fantastic 2,500 square foot loft you ever saw. It was fantastic. I lived on 34th Street to begin with, right by the a block from Javits Convention Center, in what used to be in some kind of warehousing space. And I was there for 4 or 5 years, and then the city condemned the building.
They were clearing the way for...
for the 7th Street subway, so they took my building. So I had to move. So then I had to move, and I moved to 39th Street, which was just a great street to be on, because that was the same street that the 39th Street flea market, which was every Saturday and Sunday, was. And, of course, you know, I'm a painter of objects. It was like the best thing that could happen to me is I spent 2 days at the flea market.
And you had your
every week.
Inspiration.
And then I'd go upstairs and paint it.
So how does an Oki?
Well, I've been going to New York 3-4 times a year.
So did you have friends?
I had friends. And
okay.
I had a business, and everybody in New York is there to make a living. Everybody there is there to make their mark in their business. It is the ultimate in location and lifestyle, how you manage it, how you live it. I had to work every day at painting. So did I get out and run around like when I would have been 20? No. No. I was 40. I was almost 50 when I moved. 49, I think.
Okay, then. Are they buying your work?
Yeah. We sold a lot of stuff.
But just before you moved to New York, you learned you were HIV positive.
Mm-hmm. Not just before. I had rented an apartment in New York. Not the one I had when I moved to New York, but I rented another one on 63rd Street, right off of Central Park. And then I got the news, and I had put my house on the market. I had somebody who was going to live there and take care of the pets till I move them to New York.
Oh, here.
This was not here. This was on 19th Street.
Yeah.
I had a bigger house. It's just an enormous house. I had my bags in packed, sitting in the front hall. A woman from Tulsa Cares, which I served on the board, called and said, I really have to talk to you before you leave. I said, okay. And I had been in a relationship, and the relationship had ended, and I just wanted to be clear, just no problems, we're going on. So I didn't even think about it. I mean, I unconditionally had him swab the inside of my mouth, and I wasn't worried. Why would I be worried? I was perfectly fine. So she comes in the house, and we sit in the living room, and I said, what's up? I've got a flight leaving in an hour. She said, "You're positive." "That, no, you can't be right." She was right. I was positive. Well, I didn't move to New York that day. I went upstairs, went to bed, shut all the blinds, canceled everything, and remained in bed for 3 months.
Mm.
Nobody knew I was here, but I thought I moved to New York.
Mm.
I had food brought into me. I didn't leave the house, didn't go anywhere. I couldn't figure it out. It was just mind-boggling. Anyway, once I pulled myself together, took me a while. Got a doctor in New York. I had the best doctor in New York that money could buy. He was the first doctor who saw patient zero at the hospital when he was in his residency. He saw the first AIDS patient. This guy was an amazing doctor. And once I had him and he said, "You're going to be fine, just I promise you will. If you die of anything, you'll probably die of diabetes. You're not going to die of AIDS." Well, I had buried 25 people I knew. AIDS, for a lot of us, was like World War II. We lost so many. We buried so many nice, good people. I wasn't one of them. I'm lucky.
You wonder why?
No. No. I know why.
Why?
I'm supposed to make these paintings.
Yeah. Magic Johnson had, was it about that time?
He was earlier than me. He was earlier than me.
You must have been taken by his story, though. And
yeah, well, it gave you confidence that life would be okay. It's just going to be a different life.
Yeah. Thinking about depression, somebody could be listening to this. It was so dark, wasn't it? So dark.
I had the window shut, the blind shut. I just couldn't function.
For 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
And then what started bringing you out of it?
Well, I just finally thought, oh, you're not dead now. Get up. Finally, I got up and I thought, I'm going back to New York. Sold my house and left.
Right. And a lot of people in Tulsa didn't know you were going through this.
No, nobody knew. Didn't tell anybody. The funny part was I ran into a woman who I loved dearly who was a well-known woman in this city. And she was so glad to see me and she said, "I want you and Charles, Fadre, to come for dinner. You set the menu. I mean, you set the guest list." I said, okay. And so I gave her a list, and there were 10 people. I didn't know why she was doing it. And we get to this fancy dinner. And she's at one end, and I'm at the far end of the table. And she gets a bottle of champagne, and she has it opened, and they're pouring it, and we're drinking. And Charles looks up at her and says, "Well, why are we having this party, this celebration?" And she said, "To welcome Pat back to Tulsa." She thought I had left,
and
I was just back. And Charles is looking at me because Charles was one of the men who was bringing me food.
Oh.
And he looked at me and he said, "Are you going to tell him?" I said, "Uh-uh." It was so funny, she thought I was in New York.
Yeah.
Anyway, I finally pulled myself back together, got a good therapist. Yeah.
But did Charles help you, though, too? I mean, he brought you food, but he must have been uplifting in his comments to you.
Yeah, he was, Charles could also be rather harsh. I think he said to me, "How stupid are you?"
Hmm.
The first remark out of his mouth. Well, yeah. Apparently I am. Anyway, it was a dark, dark period, but I still painted through it.
Oh, you were painting?
I was painting in a dark room.
And You can look back on those paintings today and see myself. I was depressed when
they
I did
are,
those.
They are wrapped up in plastic in the basement.
Really? Mm-hmm. You never tried to sell them? Mm-hmm. They were not sellable or saleable?
Mm-hmm. I just painted them. I didn't intend for them to be for sale.
But how do you know they could not be sold today?
Oh, I would. No, they're dark.
Oh. They're really dark.
They're not P.S. Gordon.
Well, yeah.
They're not Pat Gordon.
Yeah, yeah, they're me. It's the dark side.
But for somebody who knows your work and knows you would look at it and say, well, that's not Pat.
Maybe. Yeah. Although they're so well painted, not that they would. They just go, what's he painting? Yeah, they were dark.
You know, you talk about they're so well painted and they are, but, I mean, you must have self-doubt.
About painting?
Yeah? Mm-mm. Never. You feel really confident.
Yeah.
I'm doing great work.
I don't say it as great work. I am doing the work I'm supposed to.
Yeah.